Brahmacharyam, celibacy, ahimsa, non-violence, cha, and samatvam, equanimity, dvandva-sangyayo, in situations perceived in terms of duality. Chao cham tapas titik sham cha. Maunam swadhyaya marjavam. Brahmacharyam ahimsaṃ ca. Samatvam dvandva saṅgyayo. Chao cham tapas titiksham ca. Maunam swadhyaya marjavam. Brahmacharyam ahimsaṃ ca. Samatvam dvandva saṅgyayo. Chao cham tapas titiksham ca. Maunam swadhyayam arjavam. Brahmacharyam ahimsaṃ ca. Samatvam dvandva saṅgyayo. Chaucham tapas titiksham ca. Maunam swadhyayam arjavam. Brahmacharyam ahimsaṃ ca. Samatvam dvandva saṅgyayo. Chaucham tapas titiksham ca. Maunam swadhyayam arjavam. Brahmacharyam ahimsaṃ ca. Samatvam dvandva saṅgyayo. Ladies. Chaucham tapas titiksham ca. Maunam swadhyayam arjavam. Brahmacharyam ahimsaṃ ca. Samatvam dvandva saṅgyayo. Translation. To serve the spiritual master, the disciple should learn cleanliness, austerity, tolerance, silence, study of Vedic knowledge, simplicity, celibacy, nonviolence, and equanimity in the face of material dualities, such as heat and cold, happiness and distress. Well, this is in the context of taking shelter of the spiritual master. The disciple is supposed to develop these qualities. Some of these qualities, when we look at them, we see, well, these seem to be, some of these are from the list of the Brahman in the Bhagavad Gita. But we're all meant to be Brahmins, even though we may not have the tendency of Brahmins. Vaishnava means Brahmins. So every disciple should strive to develop these qualities. There's an old tape of Prabhupada lecturing in 1966. And he starts talking about these qualities and he says, so who has the paper? And then he gets upset because nobody has the paper. Apparently there was a paper Prabhupada had with all the 26 qualities. And then one devotee says, it's in the drawer. Prabhupada says, oh, in the drawer. The knowledge is in the book. And then he says, how can you learn these things if you don't know? You don't have the list. Where is the paper? So then one devotee gets the paper and starts reading 26 qualities of a devotee and probably goes through them one by one and makes comments on them. So he saw it as an important thing that devotees actually know what the 26 qualities of a devotee are and try to develop them. So this is this list here. The purport, I'm going to comment as I go along because each one is spoken about. We have about 4 pages of purport. Shauchyam, or cleanliness, refers to both internal and external purity. One should remain externally clean by bathing with soap and water at least once, and if possible, 3 times daily. Actually, it's interesting. Every time in the Bhagavatam, it seems like when someone leaves home and goes to the forest and starts performing austerities, it's almost always mentioned, and they bathe 3 times a day. So it's considered not only cleanliness, but it's part of the austerity of leaving home 3 times a day. And we also hear that they go there for meditation, so I'm always thinking, well, I guess they're not just meditating all day long if they're taking 3 baths a day. They have to at least break their meditation to take a bath 3 times a day. So it's considered an important thing for the yogi to bathe 3 times a day. I'll throw in one of my brain teasers. Devahuti, she was living on the bank of the Saraswati River, and it says her body was covered with a thick layer of dirt. Why does she have a thick layer of dirt on her body? Anyway, I'm always coming across these things, and I can't figure them out. One is considered internally pure when he is free from the pollution of false pride and egotism. So this is especially what cleanliness and internal cleanliness means, not to be proud and egotistic. Tapaha, or austerity, means that despite the irrational impulses of the mind, one should remain fixed in executing his proper duty in life. There's quite a bit here about tapa. This word tapa, or tapasya, we translate it as austerity or penance. Now, neither of these words, unfortunately, really captures what it means. These words in English, austerity doesn't mean what we think of as austerity, the English word austerity. In fact, you hardly hear anybody say it anymore, of course. The only time I hear it in the context is sometimes when some government is going broke, then they start what they call austerity measures, which means, you know, no more welfare checks, no more food stamps, and that kind of thing. The people... It means frugality is actually what it means. And sometimes they say tightening your belt. So that's really what austerity generally means. So for us, it kind of means something different. And the word tapas, we translate it as austerity. And then the other meaning is we translate it as penance, or Prabhupada translates it as penance. Now, penance also isn't exactly what tapa is. Penance means... It means more prayaschitta. That's basically what penance is. It means you've done something bad, and your penance, your payment for what that bad thing that you did, that's penance. So what we say is a tapasya, that's really not what it means. It doesn't really mean penance. So I think it's one of these words that, because we know what tapasya means, even though there may not be an English word that explains it exactly right. So here we're going to get some commentary on what tapasya means in the context of spiritual life. So I'll just repeat that sentence. Tapa, or austerity, means that despite the irrational impulses of the mind, one should remain fixed in executing his proper duty in life. Specifically, one must control burning anger and the urge for wanting sex life. So anger and sex, specifically, are considered. Controlling those is austerity. If a human being does not control the impulses of lust, anger, and greed, he loses his power to understand his actual situation. This is all in the context of explaining tapasya. Human life is a golden opportunity to solve the overwhelming problems of birth, death, old age, and disease. According to the Vishnu Purana 3.8.9, Varna Shrama Charvata Purushena Parapuman Vishnura Rajite Panta Nanyata Toshakaranam. Every human being can achieve spiritual perfection by dedicating the fruits of his prescribed work to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. Similarly, in Bhagavad Gita 18.45, Lord Krishna clearly states, Sway Sway Karmanya Bhirata Sansidhin labhate nara. One does not have to adopt a monastic life or live in the forest as a yogi. One can achieve perfection by dedicating his occupational duties to the Supreme Lord. So this is all an explanation. You think of austerity, you have to become a yogi, go to the forest, but here it's saying, no, you just do your occupation and you offer the results to Krishna. That's also tapasya. Similarly, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has said, Namashraya kori yatane tumi takaha apana kaji. If one sincerely takes shelter of the holy names of Krishna by chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, he will achieve spiritual perfection within the compass of his normal daily activities. So again, emphasizing this point, you don't have to go off someplace, you just chant Hare Krishna, live your life. Unfortunately, if a human being neglects the regulative principles of civilized life that prohibit illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, and gambling, he will surely be overwhelmed by the waves of lust and anger, which completely cover one's consciousness of the reality of spiritual life and draw one to engage in the phantasmagoria of the temporary material body. As Lord Krishna has stated in Bhagavad Gita 3:39, Avritam jnanam etena jnanino nitya vairina kamarupena kanteya duspurena analena cha. Thus a man's pure consciousness is covered by his eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is never satisfied and which burns like fire. Therefore the word tapa or austerity in this verse indicates that one must remain in his prescribed duty and not become impatient or unregulated due to the waves of lust, anger, and greed. So I'm going to continue a little bit on this tapasya. In the second chapter, or second canto of the Bhagavatam, Lord Brahma, he performs tapa. He hears the syllables tapa, so he performs tapasya. Somehow the meaning of the word is contained in those syllables. He understood what it meant. Prabhupada calls it the occult sound. He heard the occult sound. Occult actually means unknown, mysterious. So he heard this sound, and he knew that it was coming from some higher source. Someone else might have heard it and thought, what was that? I don't know what to do. But he knew. He accepted it as spiritual authority giving him instruction. So he followed that instruction, and he meditated. So then, of course, Krishna appeared to him and spoke to him, the nutshell verses of the Bhagavatam and some other things. So among what Krishna said to him, there are a couple of interesting verses having to do with tapa, which Prabhupada here translates it as penance. This is 2.9.23. Pratyadishtam maya tatra twayi karma vimohite tapo me hridayam sakshad atmaham tapaso naga. O sinless Brahma, you may know from me that it was I who first ordered you to undergo penance when you were perplexed in your duty. Such penance is my heart and soul. So tapasya is Krishna's heart and soul. He says, tapo me hridayam sakshat atmaham tapaso anaga. Such penance is my heart and soul, and therefore penance and I are non-different. So in the purport, part of the purport, Prabhupada says, the penance by which one can see the personality of Godhead face to face is to be understood as devotional service to the Lord and nothing else. Because only by discharging devotional service and transcendental love can one approach the Lord. Such penance is the internal potency of the Lord and is non-different from Him. Such acts of internal potency are exhibited by non-attachment for material enjoyment. So this is also a nice definition of what tapasya means. It means to be detached from material enjoyment. So then in the next verse, this has a very wonderful purport that I've always liked. Srijami tapasa saivedam grasami tapasa punaha vibharami tapasa vishvam viryam me duscharam tapaha. I create this cosmos by such penance. I maintain it by the same energy, and I withdraw it all by the same energy. Therefore, the potential power is penance only. So I was thinking of this. I've thought of this over time, actually, this idea that Krishna says that I create by penance. So I think, well, Krishna performs austerities and penance. Krishna performs tapasya. Seems a little confusing. So here we're hearing Krishna said, it's my internal potency, actually. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is going to have something to say about this too, but I want to read Prabhupada's purport. This might be the whole purport. In executing penance, one must be determined to return home back to Godhead and must decide to undergo all types of tribulations for that end. Even for material prosperity, name, and fame, one has to undergo severe types of penance. Otherwise, no one can become an important figure in this material world. Why then are there severe types of penance for the perfection of devotional service? An easygoing life and attainment of perfection and transcendental realization cannot go together. Memorable lines. The Lord is more clever than any living entity. Therefore, he wants to see how painstaking the devotee is in devotional service. The order is received from the Spirit. Now, this is really, this is the essence of what tapasya means. The order is received from the Lord, either directly or through the bona fide spiritual master, and to execute that order, however painstaking, is the severe type of penance. One who follows the principle rigidly is sure to achieve success in attaining the Lord's mercy. So the idea is, tapasya means following the order of the spiritual master. Or we might say surrender. Surrendering to the order, carrying out the order. So the spiritual master says, do this, or we take up some service, and whatever headaches come along, whatever obstacles are in the way that we have to tolerate, and just do it, that's tapasya. Because whatever you do in this world, it's difficult. Nothing happens by just snapping your fingers. You have to put in the energy, there's austerities in solving any problem. So carrying out the order of the spiritual master, that task that you have, whatever difficulties are there, you push through and you do the service, that's tapasya. That's the way Prabhupada defines it here. Very nice. The one thing we can learn from this is that it's nice to do that ourselves, that we have something in our life that we have to do for Krishna. Maybe we have, our lives allow us to have some direct service to Krishna as every day, day in and day out. But if we don't, if we have our lives are mostly about our occupation and other things, it's good to take on something, take on some project for Krishna, and then just do it. No matter what happens, you take a vow and you say, I'm going to do this, you know, every week or whatever. I'm going to do something for Krishna. And that austerity, whatever is involved in accomplishing that task, that's the austerity that purifies us. So in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on this verse, he says, penance verse that I just read, he's quoting Krishna as he often does. He says, I am always a performer of austerity. Since I renounce material enjoyment, being the master of the spiritual Vadini Shakti. So this is an interesting way that he explains it. How is Krishna performing austerity? Because he's not involved with Maya Devi. He rejects Maya Devi, material enjoyment, because he's always enjoying the Vladini Shakti. That's why he can renounce, because he doesn't have to go outside to get his bliss. He has the bliss already through his Vladini Shakti. So his penance is rejecting Maya, but kind of easy for him. So then he says, that is stated in this verse. It also indicates that from this detachment arises my ability to create and destroy the worlds. That's an interesting idea. From his rejection of Maya comes his ability to create and destroy the worlds. So that's something about tapasya, the first word here. So we'll go on to the next one. The word titiksham, or tolerance, indicates that a transcendentalist must be forgiving. Now, when I hear titiksha, I don't necessarily think of forgiving. Shanti is sometimes given. Shanti with a K is sometimes forgiveness. But here it's talking about specifically forgiving of what other people do to you. Because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Tang Sutiksha Subharata, he talks about a different kind of tolerance, tolerating material energy, that material energy is giving you. Anyway, this also comes into play here. I'll continue. The material world is full of embarrassing and irritating situations. The older I get, the more irritating they seem to be. And unless one is inclined to be very much forgiving, he will become infected by a vindictive mentality, which spoils one's spiritual consciousness. So we're not supposed to become irritable. Who was that sage that get his eyes punched out? Chavana Rishi, right? He said that he was an irritable old guy. So, sages performing austerities, they have to guard against that. Maunam or silence means that one should not speak on worthless or frivolous topics, but should discuss the actual issues of human life, such as going back home, back to Godhead. Remaining completely silent is a symptom of ignorance. A stone is silent due to a lack of consciousness. Since every material thing has its spiritual counterpart, the Vedic Shastras contain negative and positive injunctions. Corresponding to the negative injunction against speech is the positive injunction that one should always speak about Krishna. When I read this, I was thinking of something I said when I gave the Sunday feast a couple of weeks ago. I mentioned how we often have these phrases like, one should always remember Krishna and never forget him. I said, it just seems redundant. If you're always remembering Krishna, then you're not forgetting him. But that may be because it's in pursuance of this idea here. You have the positive and the negative, or in yoga, yama and niyama. So they may, in one sense, kind of be making the same point, but they're phrased in different ways. So not only are you silent, but silence means not talking nonsense, but in a positive sense, you speak about Krishna. Satatam kirtayanto mam. One should always speak about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, glorifying His holy name, fame, pastimes, entourage, and so on. In the Srimad Bhagavatam also it is stated, Shrotavya kirtitavyascha jaya pujascha nityada. One should always hear about, glorify, meditate upon, and worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. In the 21st verse of this chapter it is stated, Shabde pare chanishnatam. The bona fide spiritual master is expert in Shabde pare, or the transcendental sound vibration describing the spiritual world. Your pare is para, transcendental. One cannot artificially remain empty-headed or speechless, as advocated by foolish proponents of concocted systems of meditation and yoga. But one should be so absorbed in the loving service of Krishna and so lovingly attracted to praising Krishna that one has not a single moment free to speak nonsense. That is the purport of the word maunam. Sometimes there are those who take maunavrata and they carry around a little chalkboard and a piece of chalk. So whenever they want to communicate, they just write it on the chalkboard. They're not talking. But it's the same thing, whether you're saying it with your words or communicating in that way. It's nonsense. Better to talk about Krishna. Swajayam, the next on the list, means that one should study Vedic literature according to his individual ability and also teach others. Now this swajaya is often used in connection with brahmachari life, especially that each of the ashrams is meant for cultivating one particular quality. So education is brahmacharya, brahmacharya ashram. So swajayam in the brahmacharya ashram, they're especially meant for studying the scriptures. In Bhagavad Gita, it is mentioned that a brahmana should have the qualities of jnana and vijnana, scriptural knowledge and practical realized application of knowledge. Specifically, one should study those books which increase one's desire to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And here they give Prabhupada's whole title. His Divine Grace, Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivrajaka Acharya Ashtotarashata Sri Srimad Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, has written in a few short years, a veritable library of transcendental knowledge. Now, since this has come up in this purport, I'd like to mention a little something about the pronunciation. It tends to get slaughtered in the Jai Om prayers, especially this word, Parivrajakacharya. Seven syllables, Parivrajakacharya. Not Prajakacharya or whatever. Pari means around. Vrajaka means to go around. And Acharya. So Parivrajakacharya. And also Ashtotara, Shata. This also gets mangled. Ashta means eight. Uttara means above. And Shata means 100. So that's how you get 108. Ashtotara, Shata. 108. Okay, it is being practically seen throughout the world that when the principle of Swadhyayam or Vedic study is applied to these books, such as Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita as it is, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and the Nectar of Devotion, the sincere reader becomes infused with the ecstatic determination to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I'm still waiting for that ecstatic determination to come. Maybe there's a little determination. I don't know how ecstatic it is. The entire International Society for Krishna Consciousness is expanding all over the world on the basis of this transcendental literature. Swadhyayam does not indicate speculative or imaginary interpretations of religious scriptures. Nor should one try to read many books to increase his false prestige as a so-called scholar. One should read those books which inspire practical spiritual advancement in knowledge and renunciation, as exemplified by the books of Srila Prabhupada. The word Arjivam means simplicity, or indicates simplicity or straightforwardness. Prabhupada also translates it as honesty. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, Swachitam, or clarity, transparency, is a synonym for straightforwardness. In other words, it's also a synonym for Arjivam. So you can translate Arjivam as clarity, transparency. So you get the same idea here, simplicity. Simplicity doesn't mean dull-headedness. It means not being crooked. It's being straightforward and clear and transparent. Non-duplicitous, another word we could say. So this is Arjivam. Unless one is pure in consciousness, he will adopt many crooked means. Straightforwardness does not indicate that one should insult others in the name of honesty, but that one should speak the humble truth. That was an interesting phrase. The humble truth, or maybe speak the truth humbly. The word brahmacharyam or celibacy indicates either renouncing completely the association of women or following strictly the Vedic principles of householder life, which regulate sex life for the purpose of procreating saintly children. So there's only this one sentence about brahmacharya, but when I read this, I was thinking about something Prabhupada had said. And these days, I'm trying to be more careful about my Prabhupada says, because I hear a lot of people use them, and a lot of times I don't think that's exactly what Prabhupada meant. And sometimes the paraphrases don't quite capture the point Prabhupada was trying to make. So I looked up this one. This is Prabhupada said. It's in the Lilamrita. And this is a little excerpt from Prabhupada Lilamrita having to do with sex life. So, what about sex? Asked the ISKCON attorney Steve Goldsmith one evening, speaking out from the rear of the crowded temple. Sex should only be with one's wife, Prabhupada said, and that is also restricted. Sex is for the propagation of Krishna-conscious children. My spiritual master used to say that to beget Krishna-conscious children, he was prepared to have sex 100 times. Of course, that is most difficult in this age. Therefore, he remained the brahmachari. But sex is a very strong force, Mr. Goldsmith challenged. What a man feels for a woman is undeniable. Therefore, in every culture, there is the institution of marriage, Prabhupada replied. You can get yourself married and live peacefully with one woman. But the wife should not be used as a machine for sense gratification. Sex should be restricted to once a month and only for the propagation of children. Hayagriva, who was seated just to the Swamiji's left, beside the large dangling symbol, spoke out suddenly, Only once a month? And with a touch of facetious humor, he added loudly, better to forget the whole thing. Better to, don't have his voice, had a deep voice. Better to forget the whole thing. Yes, that's it. Very good boy. Swamiji laughed, and others joined him. It is best not to think of it. Best just to chant Hare Krishna. And he held up his hands as if he were chanting on a strand of beads. That way we will be saved from so much botheration. Sex is like the itching sensation, that's all. And as when we scratch, it gets worse, so we should tolerate the itching and ask Krishna to help us. It is not easy. Sex is the highest pleasure in the material world, and it is also the greatest bondage. But Steve Goldsmith was shaking his head. Prabhupada looked at him, smiling. There is still a problem? It's just that, well, it's been proved dangerous to repress the sex drive. There's a theory that we have wars because people are eating meat, Prabhupada interrupted. As long as people eat meat, there will be war. And if a man eats meat, he will be sure to have illicit sex also. Steve Goldsmith was an influential friend and supporter of ISKCON, but Prabhupada would not change the philosophy of Krishna consciousness to please the Americans. So that's about that. Now, ahimsam. Ahimsam indicates that one should not commit violence against any living entity. Unless one is aware of the subtle laws of karma by which a living being enjoys and suffers, one cannot actually practice ahimsa or nonviolence. Ultimately, the material world is full of violence, and the laws of nature which impose old age, disease, and death upon every living creature are themselves filled with violence. Therefore, somehow or other, one can convince others to surrender to Krishna and thus release themselves from the violent laws of material nature. That is the perfection of ahimsa. Did I read that right? Anyway, you get the idea. Samatvam dvandva sangyayo indicates that one should keep a cool head even when disturbing material dualities become manifest. So this is like the tiksha, I thought. Anyway. Samatvam dvandva sangyayo. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 2.14, Matra sparshastu kaunteya shitoshna sukhadukhada agama payino nityas tangstu tikshasva bharata. O son of Kunti, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception, O Sayan of Bharata, and one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. Okay, I'll stop here. We went through this list of all these qualities of devotees. Disciples should learn to serve. This is part considered part of serving the spiritual master, developing these qualities. Any discussion? Oh, over here. I saw Guru Prasad.
I was listening to this tape. Prabhupada was saying that in India, their families spend thousands and thousands of dollars on weddings so that they could restrict partners. Huh? Oh. So they could restrict the partners. And Prabhupada said it may seem like a waste of money, but they put all this effort just to make sure that the husband and the wife stay together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the help. And he said, also this worshipping of Kali used to be like twice a year. And that was for meat eating, also to restrict the meat eating. And then he said about drinking, it was some kind of worship they had once a year. But all these things became, you know, violated, and that way material nature is just going wild.
Culturally, they were very restricted, but now it's
right.
All hell is broken loose.
He said nowadays a boy meet a girl, they get married, you know, so then they want to break up. There's no, you know, they don't feel the pressure like the big weddings that kept them together.
Yeah.
And the same thing with the Kali Puja. Now people are just eating meat randomly and whenever they feel like it. That's why Lord Buddha came, I guess.
You want to say something, Mr. Keshe? No. Manmati?
Mm-hmm. two questions. In the start of the class, you were mentioning that how Prabhupada said we all, Vaishnava means we are Brahmins. So we should develop these qualities. But then we also hear that devotional service is beyond the modes of material nature. So yeah, we're supposed to cultivate a mode of goodness, but yet we can perform devotional service no matter what mode we are in. I always have confusion about what this means.
Well, I think it's more about you can perform an activity according to the nature that you're born with. But still, these other things, there are bad qualities too. For example, a Vaishya has to lie. So a devotee is supposed to be honest. So we should try to be honest as much as possible. Even though we may have Vaishya tendencies, we should try to restrict that. Now, of course, Krishna tells Arjuna to fight. The devotees like to quote this, every endeavor is covered by some fault. We usually, if there's some mistake happens, we say, oh, every endeavor is covered. But that's really not what that verse is about. Right? It's about every varna has some problems with it. Don't think that because instead of being a kshatriya, you're going to be a Brahmin, so you won't have to kill. Well, even Brahmins kill and sacrifice it. So that's the point Krishna's making. So there are these unfortunate things that go on even in the different varnas, but a devotee is supposed to try to minimize those things. I think that's part of it. Because we're cultivating the qualities of a Vaishnava. Of course, we also have this phrase. There's one place, I forget where it is, where Prabhupada uses the word Brahman Vaishnava repeatedly. I think maybe it's where Lord Vishnu is talking about how wonderful the Brahmins are. And he's talking to the four Kumars. So there he uses the word Brahman Vaishnava. So it's almost like they're synonymous. That Vaishnava is supposed to have Brahman qualities no matter what his caste may be. I was thinking in terms of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. How he had devotees who were in different varnas, but they all had such wonderful qualities. They were renounced for one thing. So this is the most prominent quality of Lord Chaitanya's devotees is that they were very renounced. So even though they were in varnas that maybe renunciation isn't generally pronounced, they were very renounced. So they exhibited Vaishnava qualities that we can say Brahminical quality. So somehow it's you know, both things are done. In some ways, maybe it seems like a oxymoron, you know, two words don't agree with each other. Just like the word Rajarshi, it seems like, well, how can you be both a Raja and a Rishi at the same time? That's one that always boggles my mind, because a Raja has to be passionate, really, and a Rishi is humble and, you know, meek and so on. So to be both of them is difficult. But we have that kind of thing. And maybe there is a problem. Even Yudhishthira, maybe he had too much Rishi and not enough Raja sometimes. So even the advanced devotees, this kind of tension is there. There's a kind of tension, you might say, which is the material world. The material world is not a perfect place. I think that's also part of the answer is why this is difficult. Because we're talking about material tendencies, and we're talking about transcendence, but there's a place where these two come together, boundary. There's a whole aspect of science called where they study boundary states, where things come together, boundary states. So we're in the boundary state between material and spiritual in some ways. So there's always going to be a little bit of a disconnect, it seems like. Anyway, that's a little off the cuff.
So basically, trying to minimize, like I said, so the answer I guess, understand. Is to minimize those tendencies that we have and then try to...
Yeah, those that we might be considered lower according to the nature that we're born with.
Other question is totally different. It was what you read about Krishna was saying, what Vishwanath Chakra...
Yeah.
If you could read that and explain that, I couldn't really understand.
Well, the first part... I think the last sentence is
He was talking about...
He says, I am always a performer of austerity... Since I renounce material enjoyment. So he's defining that. I renounce material enjoyment, so that means I perform tapasya by definition. But then he says, being the master of Vladini Shakti, so then he's explaining why he's renouncing material enjoyment. Because he's the master of Lada Nishakti, he doesn't have to enjoy Maya, he's enjoying Radha. Mm-hmm. Seems to be that's the idea that
other part he talks about.
So then the next sentence he says, that is stated in this verse. It also indicates that from this detachment arises my ability to create and destroy the world. So I also had a hard time with that, what that means exactly. Like, Krishna has to be renouncer, otherwise he wouldn't be able to create and destroy the world. Or you could say, well, somehow from his Ladini Shakti comes his, what does he say? It indicates, comes my ability to create and destroy the worlds. From this detachment arises my ability to create and destroy the worlds. Yeah, I don't know, it's a little difficult for me to explain what that means exactly.
Your answer, Madhavatina, got me thinking. One of the things you were saying is when we say, like when we enter a birth, the qualities to, I mean, on one level of an app, it's a complicated, it's full of complexity, but one level of analysis, it's a continuation of the past that then is facilitated in the present existence. So to what degree then is this, you know, we're saying, you know, that we're born with, you know, I'm sort of teasing that out a little bit.
Well, we are born with certain bodies, with certain tendencies.
Yeah,
Vasana, one of the
Sanskrit. I guess words. I'm thinking like this because in the modern context we think that these things are kind of essentialized in a genetic sort of way. But in one sense, even the genetics is sort of subservient to the karma and the desire that we carry into.
Well, there's no reason why Krishna can't genetically put in our tendencies. That's how they explain it. Somehow or other, those are there. Now that I think is undeniable. People are different. I mean, some people, they like doing physical work and they get energized by that, whereas others like to study and use their brains more and so on. So certainly the tendencies are there. And then, of course, as it said here, when we're reading about this tapasya, it said you use your tendencies in the service of Krishna. You live your life, chant Hare Krishna, do some service according to your aptitude and so on. That's purifying. Stane stita sutikatam tanuvan manubir. Lord Brahma said, you don't have to leave your position, you just hear from the self-realized soul. Make spiritual advancement that way.
Yeah, well, for sure, we enter into this life of penances, no question. But I guess in the modern context, the idea is it's a result of the birth, it's a result of the genetics, whereas from the Vedic context, the genetics, the birth is a result of, it's flipped. You know, the birth, the genetics, the tendencies facilitated by the culture you're born into, that is a result of previous desire, previous consciousness, that then carries you into a situation with even the genetics and the culture you're born into subservient to much grander issues of transmigration.
Well, I don't think we would reject that idea that culture affects you also. We have certain tendencies, but those tendencies are always being reformed or remolded, or you know, they're changed in some way by the situation that we're in. One of the Christian saints, Aquinas or Augustine, said, give me a boy when he's 5 years old and I'll turn him into anything, something to that effect.
Good luck with that.
I would think you'd have to have an isolated environment to do that.
As you were starting your class and reading about austerities and, you know, like the poor port, I was thinking of, let me try to like find a word to summarize what you were discussing. So for some reason I thought, let me look at my phone. So I got a message from a devotee, and basically it's like a brain teaser. What he did, he put it 26 letters of the alphabet, and he matched them from A to Z, matches from 1 to 26. So then he was thinking, you start putting different words and see what can give you success. So we try hard work, that only came up to like 94%. He just add all these numbers and came to 94%. Add money, that didn't go, different words you try to use. And the only one that gave 100% success is the word attitude. So basically, like, your class is, you're talking about the right attitude, basically, that one should have. And, I just thought it's kind of a little bit of a brain teaser. If you match every letter of the word attitude, matching it to numbers, and you add those together, you get 100%.
You get 100%. If you add up Hare Krishna, you get 110%.
In the Shastra, you were saying that there's a negative thing for every positive. So like in our four...
Well, I don't know if there's every time, but that's a principle that's often stated that way.
Is the negative things always to do with the material nature? Does it seem like that? Or no?
Well, I don't know. I think this principle is used in many different ways, for philosophical arguments and for different things. So in the context of sadhana or achar, often you find that. So yeah, it means basically, well, all of them have to do with, you know, purifying us. So generally, at least in the context of the rules that we have, generally the negative is, you know, keep us away from Maya, and the positive is to engage in positive devotional service.
I was just thinking like a four regulative principle, chant 16 rounds,
yeah,
and then only eating no intoxication.
Yeah, so that same idea is there. Do we have four don'ts and one do? But the one do is a big one. There's 16, so it's four times. Actually, Prabhupada also said that that's our austerity, chanting 16 rounds of following regulative principles. Simple austerity. All right, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Well, yeah.